Good morning and welcome to Backchat. I'm Hugh Chewett and your co-host today is Mike Rouse. Mike, good morning to you.
Good morning, Hugh.
Should we tax vacant flats? The Financial Secretary is studying the feasibility of imposing a vacancy tax on property owners hoarding unoccupied flats as a measure to address the city's housing shortage. Mr. Chan said as of last December, about 9,500 completed flats were left unsold, a big year-on-year increase. According to the Ratings and Valuation Department, there were some 43,700 vacant units across the city, accounting for about 3.8% of the total number of flats at the end of 2016. So how would any tax be applied and enforced? Would it apply only to developers and unsold property? Would it be fair? What's the experience elsewhere in the world? Email us with your thoughts. Our address, backchat@rthk.hk. You can go to our Facebook page, Backchat and RTHK Radio 3. Comment there. Call us on 233 88266. After 9:20, we're talking about Li Ka-shing's retirement. Joining us now, we have David Webb, who's the founder of website.com, a shareholder activist. Yu Kam Hung, past president of the Hong Kong Institute of Surveyors. Mopak Hung, who's associate professor in the Department of Economics at the Baptist University. And Lau Chun Kong, who's chairman of the Land Policy Panel from the Hong Kong Institute of Surveyors and international director of Jones Lang LaSalle. Others joining us in the course of the program. Good morning, first of all, to one and all. Mopak Hung, maybe we'll start with you. Good morning.
Okay, good morning.
Do you think this is a good idea? And there's this crucial thing, isn't there, the difference about whether it would be just for developers to urge them to sell their flats once they're developed, or whether it would be landlords and property owners and forcing them to or obliging them to rent out their property. So do you think it's a good idea?
Yeah, I think it depends on the policy objective. Now, if the policy is trying to reduce the haunting behavior, then that is a good idea. And at the same time, even though it is a good policy, then we think about the management cost. If applying to developer, I think the management cost may be a lot significant. But if you apply to a general house owner, then probably how to define that the property is vacant. And now 1 year vacant or 2 year vacant or half year vacant or how many weeks vacant, then we have to consider the management cost. As long as the management cost is substantial, higher than the benefit that can be brought, then we have to consider it seriously.
So you're in fact coming to the question backwards in the sense that it's probably only feasible if it's applied to developers. Hoarding, it's probably not feasible because it would cost far too much.
Yeah,
if it applied to every vacant property.
I don't know about the laws and regulation in Hong Kong.
Right.
I mean, in the current situation with them, so many electronic products, they can survey in many area, then probably the management cost is not that high given the technology. The problem is, will this violate some privacy law or whatever? So I don't have any idea.
Is it fair for the government to tell people what to do with their own property?
That's an issue, I mean. So therefore, the management cost is always a problem in such a sense.
Okay, so you tend to be in favour of it for developers, for the primary market, but not for the secondary. Is that right?
Depends on the... I mean, whether...
You think there'll be practical difficulties?
There's some practical difficulties, I think.
I'm interested in David Webb's view on this.
Good morning, David.
Morning.
What is the latest idiotic idea to come out of the Financial Secretary's mouth? It's populist, and if the policy objective is to be populist, then he's certainly leaning in that direction. But let's get a look at some of the data. First of all, the vacancy rate of 3.8% that you mentioned is not just a plucked out of thin air. As you said, it comes from the Ratings and Valuations Department. They've been doing it every year since 1985, and certainly since 1997, 3.8% is the lowest figure we've ever had. It peaked out, not surprisingly, at 6.8% in 2002-2003 during SARS and a general economic slowdown. And that figure includes apartments which are under renovation, either because they're dilapidated or for some other reason, and the tenants are going to move in afterwards, or the owners. So a good portion of that, if you think about it, perhaps the renovation of a flat takes 6 months and happens once every 20 years. So that's about a 40th of the average flat usage, or 2.5% is accountable for renovation work. Or they're just between tenancies. So how does one define vacant? That's another question. And as your fellow panelist has alluded to, it will be very difficult to administer. Would we have surveillance cameras in people's flats to check that they are occupying it? Or would we just define occupied to mean having furniture in it, in which case developers could easily put some flat pack beds into their apartments while they're waiting to sell them? The emptiness of a flat comes at a cost to any owner or developer. Once the occupation permit is issued, you have to pay the rates at 5% of the rateable value, which is basically the rent that you could collect if you rented it out. You have to pay your share of the management fees in the building, whether or not you're occupying it. And you're forgoing the rent that you could earn from it. So it's in the rational self-interest of most owners not to leave their properties empty for too long. But one of the things that's perhaps creating a small part of that vacancy rate is another government policy on so-called special stamp duty. Because if, for example, you've been asked by your employer to move up to Beijing 6 months after you've purchased a flat to live in, you're not going to sell it because the government will whack you with a punitive rate of stamp duty. So you'll hold on to it for 3 years, and then you'll think, well, should I let it out, or would it be easier to sell it if it's not let out, and so on. So they've created some of the vacancies by forcing people locking people into their purchases for 3 years under that policy and reducing supply.
David, I've got to put to you a contrary view, because that's part of being a host on a radio show. Near where I live, there's a block of flats that was finished 3 years ago. None of them have been let out. None of them have been sold. And the carrying cost of that development, I think, to the developer, is in a low interest rate era, is very low. The property going up in value by 15% a year, which it has been, he's got no incentive to do anything.
He might feel differently when markets turn down, but you know, not every owner will behave rationally. But is it the government's job to stamp into the market like this, impose difficult to administer taxes, just because a few people decide with their own property to act somewhat irrationally, or perhaps rationally because they honestly believe values are going up? I mean, you know, the point is that the vacancy rate is so low already that we would be scouring the market with policemen or newly employed civil servants trying to find the vacant units. And they would easily, any test that you establish for vacancy could easily be circumvented.
If it was just newly developed complexes?
Well, then, is it only on land that the government recently sold, or would you cover redevelopments with that approach as well?
Aren't you
moving the goalposts on the...
I think you could cover redevelopments as well.
You haven't sold them any land. They've taken an old building and redeveloped it. The old building was dilapidated and perhaps had a lot of vacancies already because people didn't want to live in it. And now they've created a new one with some vacancies until they sell them. Should we really move the goalposts on the terms of land sales? I mean, if they want to put into new land leases a condition that you must pay a punitive rate of government rates, rather than 5%, maybe raise it to 10% for any flat that you've haven't sold within, 12 months of completion or something, then yeah, sure, you could do that, but you'd then have to police that on the finished products from the land sales. And those figures that the RVD does, they do a comprehensive check on anything that's finished in the last 2 years, and then they do a sample of 3% of the other properties in Hong Kong. So they do look very closely to get that data right.
It just seems to be something not quite right that in a time of scarcity that people should hoard empty.
But they're not. You see, overall, the vacancy rate is at 20-year lows. So how can we say that they're hoarding? If a few developers are taking longer to get properties onto the market,
I look out of my balcony every day and see one developer who's hoarding. a multi-storey building.
That's his or her choice, or its choice, meaning what it is. But you know, it's not affecting the overall vacancy rate to a material extent. So you know, when you impose a restriction on people's basic law private property rights, it has to be for a proper purpose and no more than is necessary, and it must be very targeted.
All right, you Cam Hung, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Do you think this is a possible infringement of the people's rights and the developers' rights?
First of all, I want to say that I agree that and there should be some sort of vacancy tax to the developers, and because it's effective to the public price, I believe. And the execution problem is not high for tax on developer only. But for general owners, as David said, the vacancy rate is quite low. Actually, it's not some sort of a lot of vacant units in the market. And the other reason is we should not charge on this general owners that it's very difficult to make the definition for vacancy unit held by individual owners. And whatever R&D department is going to do, and if there is really some vacancy tax on this so-called vacant units, and I think the landowners can easily do something to avoid, say, for example, just turn on the lights every night, or they employ a flipping mail inside. And I think for some of the luxury apartment, that is the cost is much lower than the so-called vacancy tax. And David said, and for developer would not be easy even for redevelopment or others. And I think it's not difficult because every building have an occupation permit. After you got the occupation permit, and then you can just count that unit is subject to the vacancy tax. But of course, the tax way we can think about it, how. Is the burden of this tax rate to the developer. And even you say that you put in the condition under the land lease and to say that and within how long the developer can must sell out the units, that may not be good for some of the luxury apartments or whatever, because the developer just can sell to individual owners, individual companies. And then thereafter, they can sell the company's shares, and then instead of selling their units. All this add together means that if the government want to charge the vacancy tax, I believe that is to the developers only. That would be much easier. But the fundamental question now come back to whether it's fair, because it's taxed on a specific group of people, not to a policy or to a system. That we need to think about that.
All right, some contrary arguments. All right, when you talk about the developers, first of all, we're talking about 9,500 vacant flats. There are 2.6 million flats in Hong Kong. This is less than a drop in the ocean, isn't it?
Yes, about 0.4%, and it's
this is negligible. This and also the number whatsoever.
Yeah,
and
I think the question is not about the number; it's a drop in the ocean. But the question is about how the developers set the price to sell the units, and when they think about that, they have the cost to hold the units, and they have a time limit to sell the units. They can set the price.
But first of all, it's only 0.4%. Secondly, when you're in an era of increasing supply, which the government has been, you'd expect inventory, finished apartments and work in progress to increase because there's more supply coming into the system. And thirdly, the developers have a rational self-interest in moving their inventory out once they've captured the uplift in the land value by developing the site. They need to take the money and go back and buy more land. They have to recycle their capital. So most rational developers don't squat on finished units for a long time, and they also don't, let's forget, these things do wear out. You know, if you don't occupy them in a reasonable space of time, they start to get mouldy and you have to repaint them again, all that sort of stuff. So it's not in their self-interest to for most developers, unless they think they're never going to buy land again, to hoard the finished apartments.
All right, let's also bring in now Lau Chun Kwong, Chairman of the Land Policy Panel, Institute of Surveyors. Good morning to you, Mr. Lau. Hi, thanks so much indeed for joining us. What's your view on this? Maybe let's talk about the not the developers, the secondary market, first of all? Do you think it's do that? I mean, one thing is, you know, we've heard questions about its feasibility, but this is done in many parts of the world, isn't it? Well, some parts of the world, they seem to...
A few parts have recently introduced it, and they've yet to sort of document the problems they've had enforcing it. But
okay.
Yes.
I mean, and basically the approach there is that people have to make a declaration. People have to say whether these flats are vacant, have been vacant for whatever the period is, about 6 months, I think is common. You have to tick a box. You say, has it been vacant for more than 6 months, yes or no? It's as simple as that. Why not work on that basis, Mr. Lau?
To touch on to the developers market also. When I look at the 3.8% or even lower, I mean, percentage that may come out, I mean, later, I mean, this year, apart from the newly developed units, and then you need to differentiate between, I mean, the issuance of the occupation period and that there will be a time lapse before you can be able to get the certificate of compliance, which could take, I mean, some time from the OP. That's why, I mean, it adds to the vacancy level. And that, I mean, apart from the newly vacant units, there's also some sort of, I mean, redevelopment projects, which would make the owners or the developers having those units that they want to keep them vacant to wait for the redevelopment. So all these would add up. And then, I mean, we are already under the what we call the natural vacancy level a lot. I mean, people have been used to saying that, I mean, 5% or more would be the natural vacancy for you have a reasonable, I mean, stock in the market, I mean, for it to turn. But if we have been looking at this situation, we have seen at least, I mean, two sort of, I mean, cities or area which have, I mean, introduced soft tax recently. But what will happen? Would that affect the market behavior? It is yet to see. It seems to me that there are some sort of saying that we need to follow others. But, I mean, we need to look at Hong Kong specifically, what we have been facing right now. We are now facing a lack of supply. And I'm not sure how we come up with the evidence that there will be hoarding, I mean, of units as such. That's why it would be useful if the Retail and Management Department can so-called announce or declare what are the sort of, I mean, percentage in each sort of category that they have been able to identify, in particular for the new units. I agree that, I mean, given more new units have been developed, there must be more, I mean, inventory that could possibly be built up. That's why when I look at it, if you look at the general market, the vacancy rate is just too low. If you pinpoint the developer, then I would like to, I mean, voice out the sort of concern about how, the behavior of developers would change. When they bought the land from the government, because most of the units that we have been seeing on the market right now, they come from the government directly from those of land sales. When developers bought those of land or the land right, they expect that they have the free and uninterrupted right, I mean, to sell or lease those units. But right now, if you want to look at, I mean, a tax which will be imposed on those sort of new development, which would affect, I mean, its, I mean, sale, then this sort of risk will be reflected ultimately into the land price. So this is a game, I mean, that we need to look carefully. What are we going to achieve out of this? If you want to...
You're saying the developers will charge more because of this? This will push the prices up?
They cannot charge more because, I mean, it is a market, I mean, determined by the buyers flat prices. But when they're going to bid for the land, they need to look at, I mean, the risk profile for those, I mean, penalty, which they cannot be able to sell those units within a period set by the government or at the prices, I mean, that they want to achieve. So this is, I mean, again, back to the sort of risk that we are creating for Hong Kong in the future.
Mm. Well, it was interesting at the meeting, or the session, where this subject was floated out, that he was asked, the financial secretary was asked specifically, whether he was afraid of an adverse reaction from the developers and whether he would be afraid of that. And he paused quite dramatically for 10 seconds and then said, No Fear, and got a huge round of applause.
But he was butching up, wasn't he?
Yes, he was creating a climate. I think there's a sort of spirit in the air, and I worry about it because it spilled over into other subjects.
But he doesn't mean that, don't worry, because, yeah. I mean, you know, he is
afraid.
He does report to the chief executive, who is elected by an election committee, dominated by tycoons who develop property.
Is there another way, and I think it's related to the point you made earlier, is there another way of achieving this objective, and sort of satisfying the public lust for the developers to be spanked?
You can hang them from lampposts, but is that really what we want?
Of doing something with rates, vacant properties, that if it's sort of...
Well, that's basically what they're proposing, isn't it?
Vacant for a couple of years, then it's okay. Once it gets past a certain point, you double the rates.
Whatever you call it, rates or taxes, the approach is highly interventionist and difficult to implement. You still have to have the police force to... knock on people's doors and determine whether the unit is occupied and come often enough to, it might just be out. What if they've gone out shopping or gone?
You don't need to do
today,
that for developers.
David, you said that the ratings evaluation department had good information, reliable information on this. Well, if they've got reliable information, they can spot it.
They do surveys, right? They look at 3% of the stock each year. They do not have the force.
You have a declaration. You have people saying. You force people to say. Whether or not it's been vacant, and then you
do random checks, catch a few people. But most people you won't.
And people will know that. People will know.
Perhaps you do selective enforcement, where you go after your political enemies and check their illegal structures, for example.
Well, it's just like any other crime. It's just like any other.
If you're going
law
to have
in Hong Kong, you don't have to check everybody that everybody.
No, but you must have laws.
Have you committed kidnapping today? You don't have to go around and ask everybody in Hong Kong this question.
If people are reported missing, you investigate those, obviously.
Yeah.
But the point is that if you're going to introduce new laws or taxes or whatever, then regulations, then they've got to be practical and enforceable. Otherwise, you just have selective enforcement, which becomes a political tool. Look at the illegal structure situation, okay? We've got the laws against illegal structures, and there are hundreds of thousands of them in the new territories, and they're practically unenforceable in terms of the lands department.
Well, we have laws against murder, and still carries on. It doesn't mean you abandon the laws against murder, because you don't say it's unenforceable.
Yeah, you don't have to go around checking who's been murdered.
And you do your best to...
That's a bogus argument, it's beneath you, Hugh.
You do your best to comment, and you do your best to counter it. I mean, you make the declaration.
Those laws are...
It's like income tax.
Enforceable.
You submit income tax, and you say this is the truth, because you know the penalties.
And you have ways to easily verify salaries from employers' returns.
And you might
and
do that with
payrolls,
the sample.
And
so you
on.
Do that with the sample
but
of the, of
if
the
you
population.
Sample, if you sample 3% of the population, you're not going to be checking the other 97%. This is a very impractical proposal. And then how do you find vacancy?
I'm saying this is very common, this approach. This is how you do it. This is how we act with lots of laws in Hong Kong. This is the regulations that they're introducing in the rest of the world. You make a declaration.
No, it's not a common approach. You
have to say whether this is the case or not.
And then you're going to have a sort of red guard system for telling
in the 97% see that if you tell a lie, you get punished.
Yep.
Then, so the 97% start to tell the truth as well.
Do you think that that's happening in the illegal structure situation in your territories, or are they just all doing it?
They're unauthorised, I think is the word.
You never
unauthorised building works.
Well, you never tick a you never have to say, I have no illegal structures. No one compels you to do that.
Maybe we should have a ticker box and that will solve the whole problem here.
Only if we appoint them as ministers. Then it's a very small survey.
Yes, or they stand for election in the surveying constituency.
CK Lau, I know you've got to go soon, but let's just talk about the level of this. Say when it comes to developers, because you can kind of see it either way. We're talking about 9,500 unsold units. The financial secretary has talked about. From one point of view, as I say, that's a very small percentage. I think David Webb did the maths. It's 0.4% of the housing stock, or something like that. On the other hand. And, if we're talking about 10,000 to 15,000 new flats coming on the market each year, that's a big whack. That's a lot of that. That's like, 6 months or 7 months or whatever of new stock that's going nowhere. So you could argue that this would make a significant change.
Perhaps
let me look at it this way. I mean, assuming that the new flats, I mean, would be around, I mean, 18,000 to 20,000 units a year from now, and that, as I mentioned, we need to distinguish between, I mean, those units whether they have obtained the occupation permit and also the certificate of compliance from the government, because it make a difference for you to transfer the units out
and consent to assign. There's three things they need, and the two you've the consent to assign and cert of compliance.
Yes,
those are counted in the vacant units.
And then you need to look at. I mean, people now assume that developers can sell everything before the certificate of compliance or the consent to assign. That means assuming everything could go, I mean, easily without not much effort would be required. But I would say this is not the norm. I mean, some people would like, I mean, to take a look at those units of quality and then to decide to move in or not. And some developer would prefer not to sell everything before the occupation permit, because they want to hold on to the development to have the completed product before, I mean, they decided to sell all the units. So it relates back to the marketing strategy of those developers and also the market condition. And that, I mean, as I mentioned, I mean, if you want to force the developer to sell all the units, either you can do it in the future through the land grant, or you impose, I mean, these soft tax if you wish. But again, I mean, that would come back. I mean, it would harm the land value that you would be able to achieve out of the land sale.
Okay. Well, C.K. Lau, thanks for joining us. Chairman of the Land Policy Panel at the Institute of Surveyors, International Director at Jones Lang LaSalle. We will have more for you and a new guest after the news at 9 o'clock. Drop us a line, backchat@rthk.hk. What do you think of the idea? Taxing vacant flats in Hong Kong. Later, we're also going to be talking about the retirement of Li Ka-shing. The weather forecast mainly cloudy with rather low visibility. Sunny intervals during the day with a few showers and thunderstorms. Maximum temperature about 25 degrees. Outlook thundery showers tomorrow. And temperatures falling appreciably, fine with cool mornings in the middle and latter parts of the week. 21 degrees now, humidity 91%. Welcome back. This is Backchat on a Monday morning, first one of the week with Mike Rouse and me, Hugh Chiverton. We're asking whether a tax should be imposed on vacant flats in Hong Kong. Both the flats in the primary market that developers have just built and don't sell, and or tax on people who have flats and don't rent them out. We have, looking at the pros and cons, Mopak Hung, Associate Professor in the Department of Economics at the Baptist University, Yu Kam Hung, Past President of the Institute of Surveyors, David Webb, who's founder of website.com, a shareholder activist, and we're also joined now by Professor Yip Nai Ming from the Department of Public Policy at City University. Later we're going to be talking about Li Ka-shing. Lots of emails, interesting emails. Thank you very much. On the topic of the tax. Okay, Alvin says the simplest way is to tax vacant property as if it were let out, with exemptions to those who have declared that their flats have been resided by themselves and their families. Let's see. Joe Average says, of course we should tax empty development projects. How else are we going to find money for pay rises for government officials with more money than sense, more roads to nowhere? It might also stop price manipulation by property contractors. Of course, it could be used to finance old age pensions. You also have the situation of property you can't sell or rent. Jalal says, I have suggested a vacancy tax four times to this program. This tax should also be applied to vacant property that the government has leased for development. There are several empty plots in my neighborhood that have been vacant for years. The truth is that large developers have absurd incentives to play with the market and keep prices high. Azan says, I respect David Webb, but I would like him to address the facts. What about the Lily, which remained vacant for so many years with no sensible reason? The truth is that we have a scarcity of homes, leaving thousands living in dangerous and inhumane conditions. For example, cage homes and subdivided flats. And Jeffrey says the property prices are correct for the inflation rate over the years. The problem is incomes have not kept up. And the 30% deposit is stupid. That's the diagnosis from Jeffrey. Thank you very much indeed for that. Professor Yip, good morning to you.
Good morning.
What do you think about this this proposal?
Yeah, I think we are not alone. Other cities, especially cities who have soaring property price in the past, are also considering that. So I think it's a political gesture.
Right.
It's a gesture, but not actually a solution in such a...
It may be a solution, because that
to,
would
to a problem send that doesn't exist.
Sort of, yeah, strong signals to the market. But I mean, we all know that it's very difficult to police.
Is it, Professor? Is it sometimes necessary to make a gesture to satisfy public anger?
I think it's I think something that may generate a real or genuine impact. At least if we can release a few hundred of such vacant property, it may help the market a little bit.
Mike, your answer is yes. It's necessary when you don't have a political mandate to make populist gestures. I mean, that's you know, we've seen examples of this, for example, with the so-called buyer's stamp duty, which was really a foreigner's stamp duty.
Have those extra stamp duties of various colours, have they actually contributed to making the problem worse?
In a way, yes. But there's, you know, they've certainly tainted Hong Kong's image as a free market bastion of capitalism when we implemented them. And before Tsai Wai-lung took office, he said that mainland purchases were not a major factor in the Hong Kong market, and he was actually right. I looked at the data on that. Once he came into office, he decided that he would implement this, and it would also apply to any non-permanent resident of Hong Kong, whereas his manifesto said it would only be for, you know, all residents would be protected. So he discriminated between recent arrivals and people who've been here at least 7 years, and sent out a message to the world that if you're going to come bring your professional skills to Hong Kong, you won't be allowed to buy property for 7 years. So all of these things, you know, have a damaging effect on our international reputation at the time when we're trying to attract talent for biotech, is it, or innovation and technology, whatever it is today.
I just think that sometimes some people might want to downsize because their children have grown up and left home, and then they suddenly confront, oh, I already own a flat. if I buy a smaller
I think downsize is not necessary in Hong Kong.
people might have more space than they want or need,
yeah.
And the children have moved out.
Yeah.
But if you already own a flat, you sort of get done, right, don't you? You've got to
you have to
sell
within
the first one,
yeah,
within X months. Yes.
And, you know, actually, you're hinting to another problem, which is that in the public sector housing, when children become adults and leave and join the application list and get their own housing units, the government doesn't relocate the household to a smaller unit. So they had a flat suitable for four. Now they've got a flat suitable for four with only two people in it. You end up with half vacancy, effectively, in those units. So we're getting lower density in the public rental housing system, and the average household size across Hong Kong has dropped from about 2.9 to 2.1 in the last 20 years.
You're not just scrabbling to look at fringe cases and...
No, because you've got a million public housing units that are affected by this issue. Because when you're paying basically a flat level of rent, sorry for the unintended pun, but you're paying a flat amount of rent, $1,000 or whatever it is per month, you're not really incentivized to hand your unit back and say to the government, actually, we only need a smaller unit now because my children have left. Mm. So, you know, we're not being very efficient about the allocation of the public rental housing system. You know, that needs a complete overhaul. And the whole approach, in my view, should be changed to one of public rental vouchers. So you say to people, OK, you currently have two underage children, you know, under 18 children, so your voucher is X, but once your children have grown up and left, your voucher is going to be reduced, and you can take that and rent anywhere you want, and it'll be a full market value voucher for the help you need.
All right, we've had a lot of emails on this but I'd like to share. First of all, let's see. Joe Average says, we also have a situation of incompetent governments. We have so many bureaus involved. To get anything done, we need a government action tank, not a government think tank. If you don't have departments talking to each other, you're not going to get anywhere. Ravina says, in lieu of imposing a tax on empty flats, a far more effective way of increasing supply in the residential property market would be to impose significant penalties on developers who are sitting on vast tracts of idle agricultural land in the new territories. Hong Kong's largest developers, notably Henderson, Sun and Gay, New World and Cheung Kong, have been sitting on millions of square feet of empty farmland for decades. A program of gradual forced conversion of this farmland would help to remedy the ongoing supply-demand imbalance in the residential market. That comes from Ravina. Andrew says, what about a vacancy tax for all the unused and underutilized space between government officials' ears? Surely this could be a major source of new revenue to the Treasury.
Stupidity tax is what it's going for, yes.
Okay, let's see. And Gigi says, taxing vacant flats means only little money for developments is no use. They will continue to build mosquito-sized units of 90 square foot, but $20,000 per square foot. If you don't want to be exploited and refuse purchasing these high-priced tiny units, many will. The rich will become richer and vice versa. Matthew says, if this proposed regulation targets hoarding of residential property, it's hard to understand why anyone would automatically oppose it unless they have or represent vested interests. On a somewhat related note, I wonder if or when President Xi's corruption drive will focus on the property and other assets of party officials held in and or laundered through Hong Kong. Colin says, property rules in Hong Kong are a joke. When you get Theresa Cheng, Miss First Time Buyer, gets around government rules and avoids paying the full stamp duty, even when it's her fourth or fifth property, and now she's Chief Justice. She's not Chief Justice, she's Secretary of Justice. Colin says, when you have so many government officials with hordes of property, you are unlikely to get unbiased rules. That comes from Colin. Elliot says, an easy way to implement the vacant property tax would be to levy a tax on all properties and then let people claim that tax back as a tax credit in their salaries tax returns. This is what the government of British Columbia is implementing in its 2018 budget, with a focus on what they call satellite families from overseas who own property in British Columbia but don't file income taxes. A similar system could work easily in Hong Kong. John says, I live in the New Territories. Nearby my house, there is some government land that's not used and overgrown with abandoned cars and garage. I did try to rent it out on a temporary basis to store some items on it, but the local land department office told me the government doesn't rent land unless it's adjacent to your house. I find this absolutely silly. There's land that's not used, does not create any income. Someone is interested in renting it, clean it and use it and pay for it, but the government doesn't allow it. Those thoughts come from John. Mopak Hung, let's go back to you. You started things off. Have you heard any arguments that have changed your mind?
Yeah, I think if you think about the policy objective is raising efficiency, then we have to think about the social cost and benefit. After I hear all the information, I think the social benefit of vacancy tax is much lower than the potential cost.
Interesting that the cities that have implemented it. The second is,
if you think about the key bottleneck of the property market in Hong Kong is insufficient land supply, then if you tax on vacant land, if you tax on capital land appreciation taxes, so that it will reduce the incentive of haunting behavior much more effectively and can have the supply of the property much, much larger than the vacancy tax.
So should the government then focus on carrying out proper studies of which areas of the New Territories can be developed and then resume the agricultural land within those development borders and put it on the market, sell it?
Yes. I mean, that's a point mentioned by your listener. Yeah. And yes, they should.
Mopak Hung, you can do both, though, can't you?
About what?
You can do both.
I think if the threat vacancy problem is not so severe, and the handling cost, enforcement cost is so big, I think the social benefit is not worthwhile to compensate the social cost.
The government can resume.
So the land appreciation tax as a vacant land tax will be much more effective in reducing the haunting behavior of the in the property market, so that they are willing to supply more land for developing.
The government should take back the land that is zoned for agriculture and is, whether it's being used for agriculture or not.
I think they're going to be doing some of that in the Northeast New Territories.
And it was vehemently opposed by certain people.
Of course.
Okay, that's a different subject. You come home. Do you want to come back?
I want to raise a point. It's about the impact of the vacancy tax to developer, and it's not talking about just 9,000 something units and additional supply. It's talking about to have the big impact on the marketing strategy of the developer to set the price of the units to be sold. Because nowadays we go to see the developers, they try to sell every unit to the maximum. That means that they will sell the first unit in 1 million, but the second unit in 1.1 and then 1.2 and so on. Why they can do it like that? Because they can hold the vacant units. And if they set the price is not correct, and then no one would come to buy. And then they can just hold the units and then wait. way, and until the market, because of the limited supply, and then come up to the price that they want to achieve. But if you put in the vacancy tax, that means that they have the punishment, they have the penalty on setting the market price that not fit to the demand. That means that in the future, because of that, for every single project, when they set the marketing price and set the strategy, they would think about that, I need to sell all the units within, say, 6 months. Then the price level definitely would come down. That is a big impact, not only a gesture or whatever, and that would affect the price of the housing units. As C.K. Lau said before, that if the developers know that, there would be a rule like that. When they go to buy the land, they would reflect the risk in the land price. That means that they will put a lower price on the land. That means the cost would be lower. And yes, all this add together would mean that the housing price may be affected and to the negative side. That means lower.
But let's not forget that when we sell land at government tenders, we never do auctions these days, only tenders, there is no obligation to sell the finished property. The developer may, over the course of the development period, choose to, might change its mind and decide that this would be a rather good serviced apartment or, something to retain and rent out over time. So at what point do you stop policing them if you're going to put that kind of condition in? Do you insist as a condition of the land lease that you must sell all of the properties, or are you allowed to keep back 20% for rental? You're infringing on their choices, and that will lower the land auction.
Some interesting comments in the paper today from Cecil Chow about his new development on Chong Chow.
He's going to rent them out.
He's going to rent them out, sell them, because he reckons the market value will go up.
Professor Yip,
but he's providing the stock to the market. He's renting it out quite rationally. It would be very expensive to keep it empty and have to maintain it.
Professor Yip,
I agree that because that is a signal sending to the developer they must not set the property vacant. Either they sell it or they rent it out. But now there's no obligation. I mean, the only obligation for those developers who get the land from the open option is they put it up for sale. But, I mean, they can put it up on high price and then nobody buy. And then they just shelve it.
Right.
And it's legal now.
What about, are we going to be saved here by Donald Trump and the interest rate rises in America? Is that going to bring some sanity to our property market?
Yes.
Yes.
sorry, it will. I mean, I've been saying for a long time, most of this is driven by interest rates, not by the perceived shortage of housing stock. There aren't.
But interest rates moving really slow.
Well, not that many households that lack housing in Hong Kong. There are maybe 10 or 20,000 people, families, living in subdivided units out of 2 million. So you're talking about a 1% quantity. It's more the case that because of very low interest rates and therefore more affordability, people have bid up the valuations, but they will come down when interest rates go up and there's an expectation of 3 or 4 new, quarter point raises in the U.S. Federal Reserve rate this year, which will take it to around 2%, and maybe a year's time from then it'll be 3% by the end of 2019. So we'll see an impact on valuations.
All right, here's an email from Peter who says, Webb is talking nonsense, saying flats are only renovated once in 20 years. He must live a secluded life. Every time a flat is bought by a local buyer, it's stripped to bare concrete, irrespective of its condition, maybe pristine.
The vacancy rate is higher from that then than we thought. I mean, maybe some people live in their flats for longer than that, but... But overall, there's certainly a portion of the vacancy figures are due to renovation. And given the way that the RVD does its surveys, which, as I understand it from Ken Yu, has been telling me during the break, that they basically employ someone to count the number of illuminated
windows.
They
count the numbers by visual inspection of the building and during the night, and then to see whether there is a turn on the lights or turn off.
Yeah, I mean, and then you have to do that night after night, presumably, to see if someone's gone away for a week.
That kind of vacancy survey is good, and for doing some figures to say 3.8% vacancy, and then to tell the public, but that is not good enough to apply to a law.
All right. Peter goes on to say about you, David Webb, further saying the vacancy rate is consistent over time is specious. When the number of flats has doubled at regular intervals, the actual numbers vacant doubles regularly.
I think we're talking about percentages generally. I mean, you know, again, the housing supply each year, 20,000, is only 1% of the total housing stock. So we shouldn't get exercised about how many of those have been sold. It's the question is, what is the overall vacancy across the 2 million units of housing that we have in Hong Kong? And it is at the lowest point since 1997. It was 3.8%, exactly the same level in 1997 at the top of the last housing market. So to Mike's question about valuations,
but we can ask we should ask the question crash. About the vacancy percentage of the newly completed unit.
Sure, but you know, as I say, most developers, with a few exceptions, see the sense in selling in order to capture the profit that they've made and move on to the next piece of land and do the next project. One listener asked about the Lillian Repulse Bay. Well, that was a Chinachem project. As you know, there was very heavily contested legal proceedings over the inheritance of the late Nina Wang. But in her lifetime, she prevaricated on whether that should be a hotel, and there were applications in that changed, you know, that meant probably they didn't get all the consents they needed until they decided whether it was going to be a hotel or an apartment block. But that was her choice. But I don't think you need to introduce new laws to deal with one or two eccentric people.
Yeah, but you could say that's a public resource that's being hoarded, and so the government is quite justified in giving a nudge to people and saying, no, we need these. You should be putting these on the market.
Well, you know, there are all sorts of behaviours.
And this would be a nudge. This would be a nudge.
Should we have taxes on eccentric people?
No, they're going to send people to jail. It's not, you're not breaking the law. You're encouraging this behaviour. That's all you're doing.
I see a lot of luxury cars that hardly ever get used and boats sitting in marinas. Should we tax them for not using them because they're a public resource? Or are they, in fact, privately owned? You know, where do you draw the line in interfering in people's basic law freedoms, and how, what is the public benefit from doing so? That's what they need to evaluate rather than engage in their populist
If we were
calls.
Desperately short of cars, then you could argue that you should oblige them to
But show that we're desperately short of housing. I mean, there's this perception that we keep hearing because of high valuations that there's a shortage, but it's actually more to do with interest rates than it is to do with scarcity of the supply.
So keep throwing supply at the market.
The supply's coming anyway.
No,
we have
you're
increased
mixing
that.
Up cause and effect there. I mean, the interest rates got nothing to do with the fact that...
The valuation, it depends on people's ability to pay their mortgage, and that depends on the interest rates and their salaries, not so much on the quantity of housing supply that's out there. But cast your mind back to 2003, when we did have higher vacancy rates at 6.8%. That was an era in which the government was suspending the home ownership scheme. They had the Hung Hom Peninsula sitting vacant for years. They told the MTR to stop selling land, and they created a restriction in the production rate, which was only alleviated in the last 5 years or so. But now we do have a pretty large supply coming on stream. And I think people's perceptions of scarcity will change when valuations crash, which they eventually will.
Well, we'll see what happens. In the meantime, thank you very much indeed for all those who emailed. Lots of very interesting, thoughtful emails. Thank you very much indeed for those. And thanks to our guests this morning, to Professor Yip Nai Ming from City University, Bopak Hung from the Baptist University, Yu Kam Hung, who's past president of the Institute of Surveyors, and David Webb, founder of website.com and a shareholder activist. Thank you all very much indeed.